Welcome to First Turn, where we play board games for the first time and discuss our immediate reactions. It's like book club, but for board games. I'm Eric, and with me is Kiwi and BP.
Hello.
Hello.
Today we're going to be playing Everdell, designed by James A. Wilson. The art is by Andrew Bosley, who I met at the Mesa convention.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And he's done Mission Red Planet, Tapestry, and Citadels. I think this is...
Citadels!
Whoa.
Okay, go on.
And also Dan May of Black Orchestra and Nothing Personal. It is published by Starling Games.
Which I learned is actually the second Starling Games. There was another Starling Games in the 80s. Different companies.
Huh. Within the charming valley of Everdell, beneath the boughs and towering trees, among meandering streams and mossy hollows, a civilization of forest critters is thriving and expanding. From Everfrost to Bellsong, many a year have come and gone, but the time has come for new territories to be settled and new cities established. You will be the leader of a group of critters intent on just such a task. There are buildings to construct, lively characters to meet, events to host. You have a busy year ahead of you. Will the sun shine brightest on your city before the winter moon rises? The mechanics are drafting, endgame bonuses, and worker placement. And
worker
the box
placement.
Yep.
And the box art is some critters in a forest overlooking a little village with a clock tower water mill.
Yeah, was that a badger there with the staff on the bridge?
Yeah, I got a badger, a mouse, a squirrel, another mouse.
Is it a squirrel or a chipmunk?
I'm not very good at telling the difference.
I have no idea. I don't know what the difference is.
I think squirrels have longer tail. I mean, they're the same family, but I think it's a squirrel.
Kiwi is now Googling the difference between a chipmunk and a squirrel.
In fact, as soon as you type in difference between it finishes to squirrel and chipmunk. Chipmunks are small mammals with distinct stripes, while the tree squirrel is larger and doesn't have stripes. The ground squirrel has body stripes like chipmunks, but no head stripes. A tree squirrel is larger, has a longer tail, and no stripes. They all have short fur and small rounded ears.
So the long tail, I think, makes it tree squirrel. But like I've seen, we have ground squirrels here, and they look just like chipmunks.
Mm, so. The difference is they don't have head stripes.
Yeah, well, they don't really let you get close to their head.
Nope, you got to look. You got to see if they have head stripes. It's the only way to identify them.
So based on this, would you pull it off a shelf?
I mean, the art's cute.
Yeah, the art reminds me a lot of Raccoon Tycoon. I think this is obviously with Raccoon Tycoon, it's more like 18th century
Victorian-esque.
Sort of, yeah, Victorian. And this is more like I would compare it more to like what you saw in The Hobbit.
Yeah,
I'm
like
sorry.
When they first visit.
I do just have to correct you, though, because it's really bothering me. The Victorian era is 19th century, 1800s. Sorry. I just had to.
I said 1800s.
I thought you said 18th century.
Maybe I did, but I meant 1800s. Yeah. I knew what I meant. It's just sometimes when the words come out of my head, they sound real bad.
Sure.
No, I really enjoy the art. I think it, like I said, it reminds me of the art style in Raccoon Tycoon, which we all really enjoy. So I think with the box art and just it's got a really cool story behind it. Yeah, I think I'd pick it up.
BP?
Yeah. Yeah, the description itself sounds fine. I don't really, you know, care about the mechanics so much. I mean, worker placement, but the box art is cute, so I'd give it a try.
I'll say this is kind of one I've been wanting to play since we came out at Gen Con and we saw it there. The art's really good. It's got a weird looking board 3D thing. Yeah. All right, BP, what's the history of Everdell?
Is there a history to Everdell?
Well, I mean, they live amongst the Evertree. That's the large tree that looms over the top and provides shade and stuff to the critters of Everdell.
Okay. Not a whole lot after listening to the description. I am completely unprepared. I thought I might try to figure something out. I mean, you know, animals and stories. There's fairy tales, obviously, right? Collected by the Grimm brothers. Speaking of the actual 18th century, I believe that's when they started collecting theirs, late 17th, early 18th century. Putting all those fairy tales together, and there's lots and lots of ones that deal with animals, especially foxes. Are there foxes in this? Foxes are always, right, real clever.
There might be. There's tons of critters.
Because, you know, Myths and Legends, they did the Reynard one, right? The French one with the clever fox.
Was that the one with, with the clever fox, like tricking all the animals? Mm-hmm. Or was that the turtle?
No, I was thinking of the fox one where he tricked all the animals, like the bears, you know, and everything, and ran away and left his family because he was real mischievous. So what the box art reminds me of is hearkening back to some of those early fairy tales, if you will, about mythical creatures in forests. Don't go into the forest at night. I believe that is a dark, don't go into a dark forest is rule number one.
That is rule number one, yeah. I think we've talked about it before.
Those rules?
Yeah, there are rules to this game. It is not Calvin Ball. Okay, so the game ends when each player reaches the point where they can no longer complete any actions. And then at that point, we add up all the points, and the player with the most points wins the game. You're going to earn points by building out your town. And what we're going to build is we're basically building constructions, and we're like bringing critters into the town as well. We're gaining events when we accomplish certain feats. And then we're earning other victory points throughout the game in different ways. So this might be the most interesting first player selection mechanic, and it might create the most conversation amongst us. But the first player is the player who is the most humble.
Oh, yeah.
I read that and I was like, ooh, that might be one of the more interesting ones that we've come across. So then a player is going to proceed clockwise with each player taking one of three actions. So you can either place one of your workers, you can play a card, or you can prepare for the next season. So when you place a worker, there's across the board, there's two different types of locations. The first is an exclusive location, and it's going to be denoted by a full oval, and only one player can place one worker there. And then the other type of location is a shared location, and it's going to be an open oval, and as many players can put as many workers as they want on each of those locations. There's basic locations that are along the riverbank, and then there's a couple locations in the forest. The forest locations are randomly selected before the game starts, and they have one exclusive spot for three or fewer players, and two exclusive spots if you're playing with a four-player game. The one rule with that is if you're playing a four-player game, a player cannot use both exclusive spots. So you can only use one of those spots. There's also locations, at the riverbank and in the forest essentially give you some combination of either cards or resources. And then there's locations in the Evertree where you can claim events. And then there's special events, which are randomly selected at the beginning of the game. And then the basic events, which are in every single game. And you can claim those and put a worker there if you meet the requirements for that event. And then finally, there's there's a haven spot where you can discard cards from your hand because there's an 8-card limit, and you get resources for every 2 cards that you discard. And then finally, there's the journey, which is it works sort of like how farmers work in Carcassonne, where when you place that worker is done. You can't pull it back until the end of the game. But basically, there's a shared location to give you victory points at the end of the game, and then other locations that are exclusive, but you also have to discard cards equal to the number of points. So you can go 2, 3, 4, or 5 points. And it's also only open when you're in autumn, which is the last phase of the game, essentially. So that's placing a worker. So your other action that you can do is playing a card. So you can play a single card from either your hand or one of the 8 visible cards in the meadow at the beginning or in the middle of the board. And you're going to play those cards into your city. And the max number of cards you can have in your city is 15 cards. And the rulebook recommends that you play it in a 3x5 grid, so it's easy to track. But you could essentially arrange them however you wanted. For constructions, you'll pay the cost in resources shown at the top left card. And for critters, you pay the cost, or if you have a corresponding building, you can get that creature for free. So example, there's a courthouse building, and if that courthouse is already in your city, then you can get the judge for free. And you can only do that once. So there's going to be multiple judges in the deck, so you can only take one judge for free. You can have multiple copies of a common card, but you can only have one copy of any unique card. So they'll say, like, there's going to be the title of the card. So it'll say, like, judge. And then it'll say either common critter or unique critter. And the same thing will happen for constructions as well. And then there's five types of cards. So there's Tan Travelers, and they activate when you play them, and then they never activate again. There's Green Production Cards, and they activate when you play them, and then once again when you transition between spring and summer, and summer to autumn. You have Red Destination Cards, and they actually create an additional worker placement spot for you if you own that in your town. But if they have an open sign on them, then other players can play on that spot, but then you earn victory points if another player uses it. Then you have Blue Governance, which grant bonuses when you play certain card types, and they may give you discounts on other card types. And then Purple Prosperity, which give you extra points at the end of the game if you meet the requirements. So like example, there's one of the critters, its title is Wife, and there's another one that's titled Husband. And if you have the wife and the husband together in your town, you get extra points at the end of the game.
Did you know what happens then?
They argue a lot and sleep in different beds.
Sure.
And then the last action you can do is prepare for the next season. So if you don't have any workers that you can place, and you don't have any cards you can play, or you choose not to, then you prepare for the next season. So what that means is you're going to pull back all the workers that you've placed. You're going to gain the bonus listed for each season. So that season's going to let you, some of them will let you play, will let you do the green production cards, those actions again. You'll get an additional worker as well. And then thematically, the game begins in winter, and we play it through till autumn. And the interesting part is players don't have to perform the prepare for season action at the same time. So if I go from winter to spring, Eric doesn't have to do it until he's ready. If Eric goes to summer and BP is still in spring, it doesn't matter. So we could all finish the game at different times.
Interesting.
Yeah, and that is the them's the rules of Everdale.
Are we going to discuss who is the most humble?
Oh yeah.
I don't feel like it's me.
That was a ploy, though. He was trying to be humble there.
No. Again, how do you know when there's a pilot in the room?
Yep, he'll tell you.
Define humble. We need to define humble. We need a correct definition to go off of.
All right, humble, having or showing a modest or low estimate of one's own importance.
I mean, I always say, like, humility is overrated.
Okay, well.
Yeah, so I think in this case it's Eric.
I don't know. I still think it's Kiwi.
I guess I'll go first then.
So you're out. You've been eliminated.
I don't think it's Kiwi at all.
Yeah, I don't think it's me. I mean, we can just twazi it, I guess, since we can't decide.
I think we have to come up with a decision.
We have to come up with a decision?
Yeah. The listeners would be disappointed if we did not.
All right. Well, I'm still voting for Eric.
See, I don't think I can agree with that, because I think Eric has high self-esteem. I think, yeah.
You got to pick between me and Kiwi.
I don't think self-esteem falls into it, though. I think humbleness, like, you can have very good self-esteem and still be very humble, because all it is it says having or showing a modest or low estimate of one's own importance. So you could have high self-esteem and think that, like,
I don't think Eric shows a modest, like, a lowness to. I think he shows his esteem or his place, right, the terminology that you're using, rather well.
Yeah, but I think modesty also goes into, like, he doesn't walk around saying, like, oh, I've got certifications from Microsoft.
Do you?
I don't have any certifications.
But, I mean, that's an example, though. Like, it'd be like, you know, the whole idea of the, you know, how do you know when a pilot walks in the room? He'll tell you, like, it's because pilots aren't humble. Like, they're going to tell you that I am a pilot and that makes me awesome.
So do you walk around telling people you're a pilot and I'm awesome?
I mean, no. Because I don't like talking to people.
I'm going to throw my vote with Eric and towards you for most humble.
Ha ha, sucker.
Okay, I guess I go first then. Very well. I will admit that I am the most humble.
This sounds so ridiculous coming out of your mouth.
Your humble play at the beginning worked.
Let's play.
We just finished a game of Everdell. To recap, I was last place with 36 points. Kiwi had 38 points, and BP came from behind to win with 44 points. So, Woo-hoo. What was your strategy, BP?
I think with most worker placements in the beginning was just getting resources, and then I think I got lucky, and then Kiwi was very helpful at the end and let me go back a little bit to redo some things that I had been confused about. Luck was my strategy.
I was trying to get cards because I was treating it, even though it wasn't a mechanic that was listed originally, I was trying to treat it like an engine builder. So I was trying to get cards that would play off of each other, but I ended up with like a ton of twigs, like so many twigs. But then like everybody else had the cards that I needed in order to like get more out of the twigs. So that yep. I was trying to just build a better engine with the green cards.
Hmm. Yeah, I just tried to build stuff I could.
Yeah, so for me, two of the objectives were the shopkeeper post office and the woodcarver chapel, and I happen to have some of those. So pretty much from the beginning, I focused on completing the two event cards. And then they tied together with the monastery. So like both the chapel and the monastery are kind of like things that go throughout the game that give you points throughout. So I focused on those. And then I had a plan to maximize getting all of those done, which I did execute and got last place. So...
I think also BP ended up playing more cards than any of us. So she filled out her city plus was able to get rid of some of the cards in her city and play new cards in their place.
Right. So the chapel and the monastery are both around like giving away stuff for points. So I didn't have a lot of resources most of the game.
Yeah.
Because I kept giving them away, figuring that that would pay off in overall points. It didn't. This is a dumb strategy, and I don't recommend it.
Yeah, whereas I not only had filled every single spot on my board, including the extra ones, but had leftover resources, which, again, like I had just gone in the beginning going for resources. Also, so I do want to bring this up. I don't know if it's strategy or you want me to wait till like mechanics or something, but the part about you going third, Eric, do you think that in any way affected the play, because you were also the first one to finish?
Yeah, well, I was the first one to finish mostly because I, like, you noticed the last round, I didn't have any resources. I used all six of mine to play these cards that were supposed to give me points. So I gave away a lot of resources, and then I didn't get a lot of resources because I had to play my workers on these spaces that were doing the actions. The first round, like, I got more cards for being the third player. But like the first round, I kind of got, you know, the junk on worker placement stuff for resources early on. Mm-hmm. And then because I was kind of behind, you know, everybody went to the next season first. And so like basically the first two rounds, I really had poor placement choices, I felt like. Mm-hmm. And then later in the game, I wasn't really using them because I was playing stuff on my own board. Yeah, that was kind of a rough start. I mean, I got more cards, but like...
You don't have the resources.
Yeah, so like I didn't have any resources to use any of the cards. BP, what did you think of the theme?
I mean, I think with at least the design of everything, it seemed to play really well. I mean, the idea, I think, of, right, trying to build a civilization. So your cards are very integrated, as you were saying, in your strategy, right? You went for certain types of cards that activated, certain key points like monastery, chapel. And then you had with those accompanying, like, the monk and the shepherd, I think, right? So those all kind of, like, went together. So I feel like it was fairly integrated.
I thought the theme was good because it could have taken, like, it could have been, like, a colonization theme, which I know there's a lot of people that are opposed to that type of theme just because of the inherent, like, bad stuff associated with colonization. So I thought the way that they themed the game with animals and just kind of like trekking out from the Evertree from Everdale in order to create new settlements, I thought the theme was good in that regard. Like, it's a way to play this sort of game without the bad connotations of colonization.
The domination aspect.
Right. Yeah, exactly. I like the thing. I didn't want to get overly excited in the beginning. It's like sometimes when we talk about the games in the beginning, like, I try to say less because sometimes I will get very excited about a game when I read the rules, and I don't want to I don't want to say that in the beginning just because I don't want to, like, taint what you guys's initial impressions. When I read the description at the beginning of the rule book, which is what Eric read at the very beginning, and then I started reading the rules, like, I got super excited to play.
Yeah.
So, like, I was very excited about the theme and how all the mechanics and stuff were going to work together. And I thought it lived up to my expectations.
Yeah. I mean, I think you're building a town, getting people, and having events. So, like, that could have been pretty much any theme, but I think, which we'll get into, like, having this style really goes in with the artwork to kind of make it more complete. But I mean, thematically, like, it could have been anything. I think it was a good choice.
Yeah.
Not anything, but anything that's like town building kind of thing, village building.
Right. You could have had a more modern versus medieval fairy tale.
You could have just had a rural village.
Wild West.
Like, yeah, you could have done pretty much anything with that. I do wish there had been more, maybe, like, character, like you said, the Wily Fox and things, like, maybe having a more story aspect to the critters would have given it a little more to the theme. But overall, like,
tighten it up.
Yeah, I think it was fine. And then going into the art, like, I think you're just the theme combined with the art really gives it kind of a cool feeling to it.
Yeah, the art is really great. The box art, of course, was very nice and looked good. I think, you know, each of the individual cards, although at the beginning we did say, oh my gosh, like, these cards have so much on them. And eventually then you start to understand and it comes along. But the images themselves are fantastic. Like, I was looking at yours, Eric, like that monastery.
Yeah, the monastery
is really
cool.
It's like this tree. And then, like, the doorway is like the mouth of a face. And then it's got like two windows for the eyes and even like a lighted, almost even cutout window for like what would be, you know, in some places, like some kind of star on the forehead kind of idea or something.
Yeah.
It looks like super.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we didn't even bring up the fact that we brought out the historian bat card and you were immediately like, I need a poster of that.
Yeah.
It is super cool. I mean, come on, an historian that's a bat reading upside down with glasses. Like, what medieval historian would not want that?
Right.
Yeah, it's really cool, which I'll come to with player interaction. But I did spend a lot of time looking at the cards. Okay, Kiwi, the mechanics.
Yeah, I thought the mechanics were... I'm really enjoying games that kind of mix two sort of... what you would think of, like, when you think of a tableau building, which is kind of what we were doing with building our town or an engine builder, and then you think of a worker placement, like, generally I would treat that, like, I would when I think of those, I think of two different games, and I really like how they mix the two together because I really enjoy worker placement games, and I'm starting to enjoy engine builders a little bit more too. But like mixing in the cards with the worker placement, I thought was pretty cool, which is one of the reasons why I'm really enjoying Raiders of the North Sea, because it has that, you have the cards that you play to hire your crew members. And so I thought it was a cool way to, you know, the worker placement was to get the resources you need in order to play the cards. And then you had a hand management aspect and a tableau building to get the engines that you wanted going. So I thought the mechanics all mixed really well. I also thought it was interesting with the, you know, the different phases, but then players could be in different phases. It almost had like a push your luck, because I think it was going into the last phase, BP was on some spots that I wanted to go to, but I knew that if I shifted to Autumn before or after she did, I would lose out on those spots. So I wanted to shift to the next season before she did. And so I think it's an interesting like choice that you have to make. Do I go early and change, or do I continue playing a couple cards and then change and lose out on the possibility of going to some of the locations?
BP mechanics.
Yeah. So, you guys were talking about that with the whole, like, oh, I'm going to build this city and everything. And I know that's the theme. And then I was looking at it, I was like, oh yeah, I guess that makes sense. But I mean, the worker placement aspect, like when you just think about a worker placement, right, you're getting resources, and then you're going to try to buy some stuff for victory points on it. Like that I understand. And that was here. It was, I feel like, a little bit more unique in this aspect. Just that there were, at least with the cards and what they gave you, a lot of options to getting alternatives to just, you know, the standard hitting your spots, like getting your resources. Like you had many more options to get those resources and to build cards. That's kind of how I won, is like all of my cards allowed me to do multiple things eventually.
Yeah. So the engine building aspect.
Is that what that is?
Yeah. Like when you have things that trigger other things, basically.
Okay. I always figured engine building was more like putting pieces together to build a larger picture.
I mean, it's kind of, I mean, that is sort of the idea. It's just that we see it, if you remember like Gizmos, where when you know, picked a marble, that would activate another card, which activated another card, which activated another card. That's engine building.
Yeah. And it's like most pure form. It's kind of, it is one of those terms that's used for different situations.
Yeah.
So for rules, how was the wording on the cards?
I mean, aside from being like some of them, and I think, you know, just some of the ones I had were very complex in the beginning. I think once you got the hang of the game, they made a lot more sense. So pretty clear. There wasn't anything where I was like, oh, I think you had one question that he had to look up once.
Yeah, I believe it was for the post office.
Yeah. Although, I mean, I just read it correctly and then Kiwi was just wrong. So,
well, we weren't. Yeah. I mean, just the way it was worded, I was like, well, that could go either way. But it was the way that Eric imagined that it was.
What about the rule book, Kiwi?
So initially I read there's two editions of the rule book. And I think the second edition they did, because this was a Kickstarter game to begin with, and they did another Kickstarter for an expansion. I think it was an expansion, or it might have been like add-on stuff. But they did like a second edition of the rule book. Mm-hmm. And so the first edition like left out some stuff. Like the first edition doesn't explain what each of the different cards are. But in the second edition, it explains the five different types of cards. Mm-hmm. So the second book was a lot better. And it had a few more examples that they didn't have in the first edition. So I'm glad I found the second edition rules, or I would have said like, hey, you'll want to watch videos if you read the rules, because there's some stuff that's left out that you probably need. But I think it gets covered in the second edition rule book. So the rule book was good.
Cool. Sounds like they took the feedback and worked with it.
Yeah, it definitely sounds like they did. For every single card, for both constructions and critters, there was an explanation for every single one of them. So it was super easy on the one card I had a question about, I guess. It was easy to go and find it and read it off, and it explained it.
So for player interaction, I mean, obviously I had the basic worker placement player interaction of competing over resource spots. They did have quite a bit of alternative ways to get resources if you couldn't get to a spot, which is good and bad. Good because you don't get completely stuck, and then the bad is that it's less competitive over locations.
I mean, Kiwi monopolized all the really good spots. I mean, they're still like, you want that. Yeah.
I'm saying just in general for worker placement, you can have a really tight one like Agricola,
sure. Yeah.
Which is like, there's one spot. And if you don't get it, you do something totally different.
Yeah.
Versus, I can't think of examples.
Caverna had a good where, you know, there was one spot that was really good for a resource, but then there was usually another spot that was less good.
So that's more in the middle. And that's more, I think, where this falls. And then there's some that are like, why is it even a worker placement? Everybody can get whatever they want every time. I don't have, can't think of one off the top of my head, but I feel like.
I think that's the complaint sometimes with Feast for Odin, because there's so many places that you can go that you're almost never competing for certain spaces.
So yeah, it has the basic worker placement. I think it tried to do more than that too. Like, especially with what I was doing, like I had to look at giving away resources. So I was trying to monitor what resources you had. So I was giving it to the ones that you didn't need. So if you said something like, I have so many berries, I'd give you the berries. But that also then kind of just fell through where I stopped paying attention, which goes back to when I was admiring the art, because I spent a good amount of time looking at my cards, waiting for you guys to do whatever.
Yeah.
And then also the fact that I finished so much quicker. There was about 25 minutes where I wandered off. While you guys kept playing the game. So kind of like a player elimination thing where I just wasn't involved in the game.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a little odd. And I will say that I did do some internet surfing at the beginning when like the time between plays, we were still figuring that out. By the end, it was a lot more like, oh, you need to pay attention. But yeah, I really had not even looked at your guys' boards until the end of the game.
Was the paying attention to our boards or thinking about your turn?
Thinking about my turn.
Yeah, so that's me too. I was all focused on what I was going to do. And then I kind of had my plan for the whole last season pretty much set. So I could have just done it in 2 minutes while you guys were still working through stuff. So then it felt like your turns were taking forever because I knew what I wanted to do already and I didn't care what you were doing. So basic worker placement interaction and then not much beyond that. What'd you think?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with some of the stuff that you guys were saying. I think I ended up paying attention a lot more just because I was running everything.
Like and you making always sure that, do.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm just trying to move it along. I feel like sometimes when I forget Eric's turn or BP's turn, it's just like, move on to my own. It's just like, all right, well, it's been a while since it's been my turn. They must have already gone. So it must be my turn already. But I agree with Eric. Like it's the same type of player interaction you have with any other worker placement game.
Would you play it again, Kiwi?
Yep, I definitely would.
Do you want to give any reasoning behind it or?
No, I just
worker placement. Do you need more?
I know, I know, but I
no. Like I said, when we were talking about mechanics and stuff, like I liked the how they utilized the cards and the worker placement together, building the town. I really enjoyed that, and then the engine building piece. I enjoyed that as well. So that's why I would definitely play it again, just because I liked that mix. I don't think it is something that I would add to my collection, but I think if I saw it. I might actually like recommend it at another plate. Like if we were out and wanted something to play, I would definitely recommend it, but not something I would add to the collection.
BP.
I agree with most of that. Like I would totally play it again. I'd be interested, even though like worker placement isn't like high on my, like I'm excited to playlist. I thought the variety and the way of the cards and the art, cause it is very, an aesthetically pleasing game in the various components. I think it would be fun to play again. I don't know like how many more times. I also wouldn't rush out, obviously, worker placement to add into my collection. But if it was available elsewhere, I also don't know. Like, it does seem like the type of worker placement, though, that you could introduce like super non-gamers too, because it's not a heavy worker placement, but I feel like there's so much to it.
Yeah, for me, I don't know if I'd play it again. I might give it another shot.
See if you went first, if it made a difference.
I don't think that was it. I think for me, the frustration is like, and it was probably just a stupid strategy, but I kind of had a plan for my engine out of the gate, and I did it, I think, as well as I thought I would go. And it basically was like pointless. Like, I would have done better just picking up cards and playing them randomly and seeing what came. Yeah. So I might give it another shot just to see how it went a second time, but I would be inclined to pick a different game, I think.
Okay.
I will say, like, I was having much more fun at the start, and then I thought I figured it out and it was fun. But that finishing, that last round where basically I knew what I wanted to do, and it was like 30 minutes of waiting to do it and then 30 minutes of not playing the game, like, really killed it.
Yeah.
It's fair. So I was going to bring up the expansions that are for it. So they have Belfair, which adds a fifth and sixth player, gives player powers and a new market location. And then they have Pearlbrook, which adds a river board, a new sideboard. It adds pearls as one of the resources, because now there are aquatic critters in construction. And you get to send your frog ambassador out. So you get a frog ambassador. And then the last one, I think these all came out this year or are going to release this year. Spirecrest adds in weather that provides some limitations during rounds. There's new critters and creatures, and then there are big critters which you can ride as mounts, and they literally have large animal meeples that have saddles that you can put your regular workers in. So there is a picture of a hedgehog riding a bear, or a fox riding a moose, or the turtle riding a goat. And at first I thought it was a rabbit riding a tauntaun, but it's just an eagle with its head turned around, which obviously will freeze before you reach the first marker, but whatever.
Up next, we're going to be playing Dale of Merchants, designed by Sammy Loxo. An artist was also Sammy Loxo, and it was published by Snowdale Design.
Which, from my research, I believe is also owned by Sammy Loxo.
I kind of assumed. Figured it's like a Red Raven thing with Ryan Lockett. Just does all the work.
Yeah, he just does everything.
Show off. It is an age of great discoveries. New and wondrous items find their ways to the hands of the greatest merchants. And if there's ever a place those traders love, it is the town of Dale. There's an extraordinary guild in the Dale founded by the greatest merchants. The tricky part is getting membership, since one must win the annual trading competition to be invited to the guild. Notable animal folk merchants from all over the world have gathered in the town to take part in the event. Everyone has only one goal in mind: to be celebrated as the winner and the newest member of the legendary guild. The mechanics are card drafting, deck, bag, and pool building, dice rolling, hand management, set collection, and take that. And the box art is of a little village in a valley with a waterfall and river running through it. So based on this, would you pull it off the shelf?
The description reminds me of Sheriff of Nottingham and setting up your trading stall and trying to win. So I think based on the description, I might. The box art itself, it looks like a watery color. There's a waterfall with a village in the background and like a nice road. And then there's looks like maybe some sort of bird with a backpack on overlooking the town. The art's a little boring, I think, on the box, but the description is interesting enough. I think I would pick it up based on that.
Yeah, I agree. The art looks like it's trying to be cutesy, but it's just an image from so far away that it doesn't look as vibrant as kind of the description makes everything sound, right? It sounds very exciting. Like there's this adventure.
It sounds like a big competition going on.
Competitions, yeah.
Versus a sleepy little town.
Yeah, I mean, I'm intrigued because guilds already sounds medieval. Merchants, I don't know what the mechanics are. Again, I zone out during that whole thing, but you know.
Also, the subtitle is The Guild of Extraordinary Traders, which reminds me of The League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, which was a movie that is real bad, but I very much enjoyed.
Okay, so we agree we would all pull this off the shelf.
Yeah.
Well, when you were reading the description, I mean, one, I did kind of prepare today, like one, the whole idea of guilds, obviously very medieval, but also this idea about being traveling merchants reminds me too, because just this week was introducing Africa in my world history class, and especially some of the trading cities that grew up like in Timbuktu, that just, you know, the accounts of them sound like this, right? Kind of these exotic markets with, you know, a well laid out prosperous city trading in gold and things like that. But the premise of the game with the guild and the competition reminded me much more of especially Italian medieval merchant guilds, which goes along with this scenario quite well. And I mean, guilds, as when we talk about them in history classes, some professors like to introduce them as kind of this idea of like trade unions, but they can become much more involved, I feel like, than just like your normal like union membership. Guilds regulate all aspects of the business, who can participate, who can't. They also, once you're involved in them, with kind of like the union membership, they take care of the people within their guilds, but they can also be pretty monopolistic. They set prices. They act as cartels. So especially for merchants, if they want to go on big ventures, you could get a bunch of financial backing through the guilds. They participated in their communities, building churches and donating to charity events. But also in Italy, they would also back different teams, like racing teams, especially in Northern Italy. Having horse race teams was quite popular. So that kind of idea of trying to get involved in this very lucrative guild and become, you know, kind of an exclusive membership with all the benefits and profits, that's what this reminds me of. So intriguing and seems very historical.
So these are a lot like the guilds and union, like the pipefitters union and plumbers guild and all that kind of stuff that you see today? Are they different?
Because of the types of crafts and artisans that would have been around in the medieval world. So you would have merchants guilds, but mostly guilds based on different types of artisans. So maybe not plumbing because, you know, no indoor plumbing in medieval houses, but cobblers. Right. So shoemakers, one of the ones that my advisor studied in her latest book was the guild surrounding the silk industry in Paris. But like everything. So textiles, blacksmithing, cobblers, bricks, you know, builders, carpenters. You got to think old school, like what a medieval town would actually have. But yeah.
I added the history tag into our iTunes for this podcast. So.
Well, great.
Yeah. So how do we play? That's a good question, Kiwi. Let me answer that for you. So this game does not have any points. The winner is going to be the first player who can finish their eighth stack in their market stall. This one also has a interesting first player mechanic, although it's going to take less discussion than our previous game's Most Humble. It's the player who woke up first today.
I think we do know who wakes up earliest.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, does it count if I was up at 3:30 because the cat was headbutting me and I went back to sleep?
I get up multiple times throughout the night, so I don't think that that's going to count.
Okay, well, in that case, it wasn't. Okay, so BP gets to go first.
I have a healthy sleep cycle, so I'm good.
Right. No, I do not. All right. So each player is going to take turns, starting with BP, and then we'll go clockwise around the table. And everybody has two phases. So the first phase is the action phase, and you get to perform one of four actions. So the first action is the market action, where you can purchase cards from the market board based on the value that's on the card and where it's placed on the market board. So if the card is a value of four and it's all the way to the right, then you have to pay four. And that four is going to come from adding up the values of the cards in your hand. As we move left across the market board, it will increase. So the card that is all the way to the left will be the value plus four. You can overpay for the card. So the example that I gave in the book was, if you're buying a card that it costs you five, you could use 2 4 cards from your hand, but you couldn't use like a three and a two, which equals five, and then add in extra cards just to get rid of them. You're not allowed to do that. The way it explains it is you can overpay if the cost of the lost card or lost number is less than the amount you overpaid. So that part is a little bit confusing, but your second option is a technique action. So there are three different cards, types of cards in the game. There are techniques, passive cards, and rubbish. So if your card says technique on it, you can play it and it do the text that is at the bottom of the card. And then if it has a plus icon in the top left, you get to take an extra action.
Is that rubbish as in like trash or the colloquial term?
Nope, it's trash.
Okay, excellent.
Your third action that you can do is the stall action. So you're going to take cards from your hand and you're going to put them, you can build one of your stacks. So the stacks in your stall are going to go in ascending order from 1 to 8. And the cards that you play from your hand have to equal exactly the number that is for that stack. So for a 1, you need exactly 1. For the second stack, you need exactly 2, and so on. Once you play them, you no longer get the effects that are on that card, so passive effects or the technique effects. And the cards all have to be from the same set of animal folk. So there are 8 different animal folk in this game. There are snappy scarlet macaws, giant pandas, northern raccoons, flying squirrels, ocelots, and veiled chameleons.
Is there something different between northern raccoons and southern raccoons? Does one have a different accent?
Yes. One talks with a very slow southern drawl.
I knew.
The northern ones do, though. It's very confusing.
Yeah, right, it's very confusing. Yes. The ones from the south actually talk like they're from Boston. So yeah, and then each of those animal folk will have a power that stays within like the same sort of theme. And then your last action you can take is the inventory action, where you just discard any number of cards from your hand into your discard pile. And then you move on to the cleanup phase, where you perform 2 actions. You're going to fill your hand back up to 5 cards from your deck, and then you're going to fill up any empty market spots. So we're going to slide all the market cards to the right, and then we're going to draw a new market card and put it on the far left. And we're just going to keep doing that until the game end is triggered. So our starting deck is going to be a card that is a value of 1 of each animal folk, and then 4 rubbish cards, so that we each start with a deck of 10 cards. And that is all of the rules.
So let me guess, one of the mechanics is deck building.
Yes. Since BGG has shifted everything over to the Jeff Engelstein, Isaac Shalev mechanics system, instead of just saying deck building, now it says deck bag and pool building. It's all kind of together.
Anyway, let's play.
We just finished a game of the Dale of Merchants, the Guild of Extraordinary Traders. To recap, BP had 4 stacks completed. I had 6 stacks completed, and Kiwi won with all 8 stacks.
Actually, I had 5.
Yeah, one correction. Yeah, I was about to say she has 5.
Oh, so Kiwi failed the show notes, and we are rescinding his guild membership. So what was your winning strategy, Kiwi?
I was trying to get rid of as many cards as I could to try and pare down my deck a little bit. And then find the cards that would help me build out the stack. So like I was resetting or trying to reset the market more often so I could find that 3 of the chameleons because I knew I had the 5. And then I tried to just pare down my deck so that my hand was exactly what I wanted it to be every time.
It's pretty good. I kind of was figuring it out as I went. I had the cards that let me pick up anything from the market. So I was just kind of using those and not really buying. And then I was just trying to pick up, like, I knew I had a 3 in the deck, so I'd try to pick up another 3 of the same type. But getting the right ones in my hand was not working very well. So
Yeah,
you reset a lot.
Yeah, I just, because I knew I had what I needed in the deck, so I just kept resetting until it popped up. And then, like, there was one point where I had the one where I could place the 5 and then the 6 immediately, but like,
yeah,
I didn't want to use the certain cards. So maybe, I don't know. I was kind of like debating over which ones I should place down. And I think I waited too long. BP?
Strategy.
Yep. What was your strategy?
Not having a strategy.
Yeah. Chaos is a strategy.
I think, yeah, right. No, I'm pretty sure like towards the end, I was like, oh yeah, I've got to remember that the goal of the game is this, building your stalls and not just collecting and buying cards. I have this problem apparently.
Well, so the hoarder approach.
Yeah. Apparently that's my strategy in deck builders. It's not successful ever, BT dubs.
The statistics show it. So on the theme, I mean, the cards didn't really, like, there was a snowman. They just seemed to be like a random set of things that didn't really, I don't know. I didn't really get the feel of like Critter Merchants, I guess.
Same.
Especially after Everdell, like I thought it was a much stronger sort of critter community theme there.
Yeah, I feel like some of the cards sort of fit into the theme. So like the raccoons, like I think they were more themed around like what they wanted each of the animal kin to like do, and not so much like, I feel like the art and the names of the cards didn't necessarily go together. So like, you know, macaws, I can see a spyglass, they're going for like a pirate theme, right? But then there were cookies. Like how does the cookies come in? Or the shattered relic, like how does that come in?
Yeah.
But then you had like the squirrels. Okay, cool. An empty chest. They probably could have made it like a picnic basket or something.
Yeah.
And then an acorn. And then Eric, I think you had the one with peanuts. Like some of those made sense.
Yeah, but I mean, ultimately they're other just ones, food that.
Yeah. So I feel like they could have themed it, the cards with the art and all that stuff together more. Because the way it is right now, it could have just been like a bunch of names of people. And you could have been like, these people are all from the United States. And these people are all from France. And these people are all from Great Britain. And you could have done the same exact thing. And it didn't have to be guild themed.
Yeah. And I mean, like one was like a change of season. So like, how is that a thing you would have in a marketplace? I guess. Right. I don't know. It just seemed like they were just kind of, they had a few good ideas for each one. And then they just sort of filled in the rest.
Yeah,
I didn't feel like it flowed together. If you think about how the theme played out with the mechanics and that type of thing, I feel like it could have been.
So, BB, what'd you think of the art?
I mean, I think it's really cute. There's a lot on the cards, but it's not overwhelming. Although, I did not get around to reading all the additional text at the bottom of the cards.
Oh, I didn't read any of them.
Yeah. Life is hard for European raccoons. The outsiders without a homeland, you know, like there's a lot on them and that don't necessarily add to the gameplay.
Nor do they make sense. Ocelots won't get discouraged by drawbacks. They embrace nature's amusing unpredictability. I'm not sure that's scientifically accurate.
I mean, it's cute. I see where they were trying to go with it and nice to look at.
It doesn't draw me in like other, like I thought Everdale, like you know, Eric mentioned he spent time looking at the cards in his hand because some of them were really cool. Like, I didn't really spend time looking at any of the cards here except to read the text on them to see what they did.
And the additional text would be nice, except there's already so much text on there and the game is pretty fast paced.
Yeah, there's so much text, I feel like. And then, like, to me, like, at least in Everdell, like, okay, you can glance at it and, like, no, this is a building, so this is going to be, like, a construction. This is a, like, the actual art gives you a hint as to how the card plays, whereas this is just a picture.
Yeah, you have to read to know.
Yeah. So I think that's kind of one of the ways that art doesn't really, you don't really pay attention to it because it doesn't really give you any clues or any direct indication of what the card does. Kiwi, how about the mechanics?
There was, you know, sometimes in deck builders, you don't have a way to cycle out the market, and we all had a way to cycle cards out of the market. So that was good. So you were able to see new cards. I think a couple of times it came back around to Eric and neither BP or I had cycled, and Eric didn't have the card to cycle market cards. So he ended up seeing the same exact thing, which caused him to reset, I think at one point, like three times in a row, because he just didn't have what he needed.
Well, I wasn't looking at the market then. I was just trying to get to my cards in my deck. But there were a couple of times where I did want to buy something from the market and it was all junk. And then nobody else was buying anything. So it was like the same market. And then I just bought whatever.
Yeah, and that's a common thing with not good deck builders is there isn't a way to cycle the cards out. So I thought that was good. And then, you know, the putting the cards together to go into your stacks and your stall, I thought it was going to be harder just to match up all the animal folk. But then there's plenty of cards that you're able to play that, you know, you don't necessarily need. So like the squirrels help you out. And so I was able to use two different squirrel cards to fill out some of my stuff. And then with the chameleon being able to copy cards, I was able to use that one too. So you're not like super stuck to, okay, I can only use one type. So they gave you options to, you know, multiple ways to create your stacks in your stall, I felt like.
The stall building is like the unique mechanic in this one compared to other deck builders. Yeah. I think it's really cool that you got to like pick, you know, well, I want to build this stall to keep going, but I want to keep this card. And so,
yeah,
like,
BP said that.
Yeah. So there were like my red cards I was saving because I thought they'd help me in the later higher numbers, and black cards, the panda cards I was using to buy stuff from the market. I didn't want to get rid of those. So then I was really limited on what I would actually use to put in the stalls. So I think that was an interesting, and then your deck is being reduced drastically as you get higher into the game, which is usually you have the opposite problem where your deck is getting like too big.
Yeah. You almost want to try and create those larger stacks with as few cards as possible, which means you need more expensive cards to do it.
Well, I will say, like, I felt like you ramped up really high. Like, maybe I was just buying dumb because I didn't know, but like I got a lot of fives and fours early on. So doing the three and the four spot was really hard, which I think BP had the same issue with.
Yeah, I wanted to hold on to some cards to use them to buy stuff from the markets. And then by the time Kiwi was hitting seven and eight, I was like, ooh, I got to figure this out. And then I was running into the same problem that Eric did, where it's like, I don't have the right combinations in my hand.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I was concerned because I think it's when I played the six, I was like, I don't know if this is a smart move, just because I realized that my deck was super small at that point. And I knew that a lot of them were the smaller cards. And I was like, it might take me longer to get the bigger cards I need for seven and eight.
And I did the opposite. So I think you did that move and it did slow you down. But I did the opposite where I wanted to hold on to my strong cards for the end. So then I delayed a little bit in the middle of the game, I guess. And I guess your way was the smarter way.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it definitely was interesting because like it could have gone both ways. Right. I feel like had that three not popped up for the chameleons, it would have taken me longer to get there because I didn't have the cards to do it, you know? So it's good that it has strategies, different strategies that even though one strategy won, that you could see that the other one would have been viable as well.
On the rules, how was the wording on the cards?
I mean, I think we've talked about it already. Well, one, there's just a lot of words. I think though it was clear once we figured it out. I do want to comment like on the rules overall though, in that there was a little frustration, at least on my part, in the beginning of when, like, when you could play the wordings on the card versus just buying them. That was just me, maybe, and being like thinking that these were separate actions, but then some of them you could still do those actions all the time. So I was a little confused on that.
Some of the passives are very active, which makes it very, a little confusing. Yeah. So I don't think that was just you. I would assume if you're rolling a dice, that's an active move, but
that's what I was thinking.
A Kiwi on the rule book and everything.
Yeah. So the rule book, so just like the kind of that flavor text at the bottom of all the cards that wasn't really necessary. There's a lot of flavor text just like that in the rule book as well. And I feel like they could have used that space to provide some more examples of different things, mm-hmm. or maybe explain like some of the other rule books that we've come across where at the end of the rule book, it'll be like, you know, hey, this card, like this is how it's played, to like give you more of like a, almost a frequently asked questions section almost. And I'm wondering, cause I know the company itself is Finnish.
Okay.
So I wonder if some of that is just the translation from Finnish to English, that maybe some of it was lost. But I think overall, like the rules aren't bad. I think it could have used a few more examples and less of the flavor text.
And I think this is a common thing where designers are like, well, here's what I want the theme to be. So I'm going to write a bunch of flavor text and things to get the theme across. But if it's not part of the game, then people don't really read it, or maybe they do if it's funny, but it doesn't really, like, it doesn't really make the theme work, all because you have really small text at the bottom that tries to force it, I guess. Player interaction, I mean, pretty standard deck builder. There were some cards that let you take from other people or copy other people. I don't think we used too much of it. I think at one point Kiwi took something from my hand and I didn't really even notice.
Yeah, I think kind of like with Dominion, like you can have a set of 10 cards that has no player interaction. It's just you trying to get to the end faster than anybody else. But then there are also cards that, you know, depending on how you build out those 10, you could have a very like take that style game of Dominion. And it all depends on which 10 you choose. I feel like with this one, you know, there's the 6 different animal folk, but only one of them really does anything to other players. I think it was the raccoons. Mm-hmm. That's the only one that interacts. So, I mean, we all, like, the very first stack that we built was with the raccoon card, you know, the one value raccoon card, which didn't even affect other players. Yeah, I think the player interaction was pretty light. I'm going to continue to compare it to Dominion because I think that's the closest. I think it's the closest to how this game plays, is closer to Dominion than other deck builders that we have.
Yeah. I would say Dominion has a little more than some deck builders. They're all pretty light, but
yeah, I think if you're looking for player interaction, like this isn't, I wouldn't go with this game.
All right. Would you play it again? Kiwi?
I think I would.
Really?
Yeah. I definitely wouldn't purchase it. I wouldn't purchase it. I don't think I would recommend it. Cause I think there are better deck builders out there. If someone was like, hey, let's play this game, I think I would play it again.
Yeah, I'm actually kind of in the same boat. Like, it's short enough and inoffensive enough that I'd play it again. But if Dominion were sitting next to it, I would play that, or you know, some of the other deck builders we've played. Like, it's not, I don't think it's bad. I don't think it's not enjoyable. I don't know that it does anything different that would make me really like want to play it. And it's low on the player interaction end for me, but I guess like that's all deck builder, so if I'm gonna play one, then I'm kind of in that mood anyway.
Well, 2 out of 3 of us enjoy deck builders. The 1 out of 3 of us does not. I mean, again, I'll sit down and play them. I am not gonna go out of my way to seek them out, and that would be the same with this one. I don't see any difference between this one and Dominion or whatever. It's just different images.
There is an expansion, and it adds systemic Eurasian beavers, which have cards that trigger after other events occur. And then a year after this was published, they published Dale of Merchants 2, which adds, for 4 players, it adds a battle mode. And then it also adds 6 new creatures, or 6 new animal folk, and you can combine them with the animal folk from Dale of Merchants 1. So it includes experimenting platypuses, platypi, diligent pale-throated sloths, friendly finnick foxes, intimidating dwarf crocodiles, reckless marbled polecats, and observant snowy owls.
I mean, see, all of these names sound incredibly cute. They just did not, like, I feel like got played out very well in the cards. Like,
That's Dale of Merchants.
Well, if you have any animal game recommendations or deck builders, even though one out of three of us is not super into them, feel free to provide us with any sort of feedback via Twitter, Instagram, or email. Twitter and Instagram handles are at FirstTurnCast, and the email is firstturntabletop@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you, so please rate, review us, and subscribe on all your favorite podcatchers.
If you find one, let me know, because when I get autumn, I'm going to have a great number of twigs.
Do you have a plan for those twigs?
Nope, I do not, but I'm going to have a lot of twigs. The chip sweep. Three berries.
I didn't even know we had friary. A chip sheep. Sheep. Sheep.
Sweep. Sweep. Sheep. 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 Activate all your greens. One of your green cards you'll get to activate again if you have the cheap sweep. Chip.
Gotcha.
You do not draw a card for playing this historian.
All right. Oh, and it's EP. A bat?
Yep, it's a bat.
Oh,
reading upside down.
I need this card.